Congratulations, you have found the Lambcast, the official podcast of the Large Association of Movie Blogs, also known as the Lamb. The Lamb is the largest collective of online movie blogs and podcasts with 2,000 members and counting. Every week on the Lambcast, various members of the Lamb community get together to talk about our favorite subject, movies. So bookmark the Lamb and follow us on social media. Be sure to join us each week to hear a lively discussion of films and movie-related talk from our members. Join the flock at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Hello and Merry Xmas. It's that time of year again when the Lambcast gives our diehard fans an episode about the holidays. We are doing something different this year, a concept that hasn't been done before on the Lambcast, and in doing so, we'll be exploring the ghost of Christmas, past, present, and future. Our fearless leader, Richard Marley Kirkham, has left it to me, Howard Scrooge Kasner, to confront these ghosts with our festive guest. I did say bah humbug, but it didn't work, and he scared me into going on with the show. Before explaining the setup of the show, let us first introduce our festive guest. She is a wealthy heiress who married a retired private detective with a drinking problem she is now inheriting as well. Together, she and her wobbling husband look into the mystery of an adventurer who disappeared, doing so while under the influence. Nicole Nora Charles Ayres.
Hello. Glad to be here with my spiked eggnog in tow.
Fantastic. Next is a private detective whose business is so bad he has lowered himself to write a crime story for a lurid pulp magazine. When the company decides to publish it, he finds he was really only wanted to look into the disappearance of the boss's wife, Dave Philip Marlowe Anderson.
Good morning, or at least morning here. Good to be here.
Next, we have a college student who finds herself and her sorority sisters being stalked by a mad slasher, Rachel Jess Wagner.
Happy to be here. Merry Christmas.
And last but not least, and he still hasn't got his Red Ryder carbine action 200-shot range model air rifle, but hope springs eternal, Todd Ralphie Parker Liebenau. Todd, you're going to put your eye out.
Yes, I'm glad that you gave me the Christmas story connection, because I kid you not, at that age, that is precisely what I looked like. I looked just like that kid from A Christmas Story. I even had a bunny costume. So,
did you stick your tongue to a frozen, what is it, lamppost?
I did not. I was not that adventurous. Not by a long shot.
The setup of the show will contain a series of categories for which we have all been asked to provide a short list for. Hopefully each guest has checked them twice. And some will be naughty and some will be nice. So first up is the Ghost of Christmas Future. There are two categories here. The first one, the most wished for presents for the holiday season, which we would like to see under our pagan fir tree that symbolizes everlasting life and fertility, as well as the rejection of the dark and welcoming of the light. So let's begin with Nicole.
The gift that I would love to be under my Christmas tree this year is a BenQ projector, specifically the model HT2050A. While reading and listening to reviews, while shopping for projectors in recent years, I saw a very detailed video on YouTube that almost looked like a movie. And unfortunately, when I went back to it this weekend to give a shout out to the creator, it looks like the video is no longer available. But that video, after reading different reviews online, the video is what sold me. There's a lot of flexibility with this particular projector. It can be mounted in different ways and also used as a freestanding device. And from what I understand, it produces a high quality image when projected on a screen with great built-in speakers, and it seems to be like a Swiss Army knife of projectors based on that video. The reviewer put this thing in a handful of indoor and outdoor conditions, and I liked how the model performed well regardless of the environment that it was in. So that is one of the items that I've been putting on the back burner to purchase. I have since purchased another projector, but the projector that I have, it gets fuzzy in a couple of areas. So the BenQ HT2050A is on my Christmas wish list.
I hope everybody was taking notes out there. Do you have other things you're wishing for?
Yes, I do. I'm also wishing for an HQ Plus letterboxed subscription. So for those who've been on Letterboxd, you might be familiar with the memberships. They have like a free tier and a pro tier and a patron tier. So there are two additional tiers that they don't seem to promote publicly. There's an HQ and HQ Plus tier, which is meant for organizations, studios, distributors, podcasts, festivals, and theaters. And the HQ Plus tier has some additional features like the ability to pin movie lists to a profile and view analytics and link to news and content from external sites and further customize the Letterboxd profile with like a custom backdrop. And HQ Plus members also don't view display ads, and ads don't show up on the pages for HQ accounts, which is a big plus. And
amen to that. I so love Letterboxd, but it is one of the worst sites out there when it comes to ads.
Yeah, man. So that was the next one that was on my list, because that's huge. Even without the customization features, that no ads, thing is one of the features that that makes me really want this particular membership. So
I've been thinking of springing for this myself. Right now I'm going by the free Letterboxd, but I probably spend more time on Letterboxd than any other site. And I'm intrigued by, just some of the little bells and whistles you could get when you pay for things, like being able to choose which version of the movie poster you want to display, when you log a movie and things like that. I mean, it's silly because it's, it only matters to me, but am I willing to pay for it? I guess we'll see.
Yes.
I like the
ability to, I'm glad you brought up the movie poster thing, because some movies have, a few different posters, and sometimes sometimes the American one might be worse than say one of the international ones. So I'm with you on that.
Well, great. And do you have another one?
It's my last gift item that's on my wish list is actually a toss up between a Blu-ray player and a repair for my laptop. So I have like two or three DVD players that all stopped working. The last one was on its last leg several months ago. And so I've since just been watching VHS tape, like movies on VHS, and old shows that I recorded using a borrowed VCR until I can spring for another Blu-ray player. I'm using the current one that I have in my office, so I don't have one at home. But on last Wednesday, the screen on my laptop suddenly started acting crazy, and now it's hard to read the text on screen and complete tasks, and all of the colors are off. So I'm currently doing what I can on an old borrowed Chromebook until I can figure out how to come up with the funds to have my laptop repair. One place I contacted said that I might need, that the screen needs to be replaced And then another place said that they need to take a look at it based on the photos that I sent them. So I think I tend to watch when my DVD players did work, I would have like Lord of the Rings on all day long, every single day. And then I would switch it out in favor of a couple of other movies. So I do tend to watch movies a lot when I have a working DVD or Blu-ray player, but I think the laptop is more of a pressing matter since I do my work on it. So I think the laptop would be that. That's my third pick, because having a repaired laptop would then allow me to eventually buy a new Blu-ray player. So that's
well, fantastic. We've hope our viewers are taking copious notes, and I'm sure you've been nice this year, so you won't get coal in your stocking.
Yes, so, I have to most people, yes. Except for the person I'm trying to kill. I didn't say.
Oh, well, there's always that. We can give you that. So let's move on to Dave. And what are the gifts you are looking forward to or would like to receive?
Okay. Well, I am a pretty huge collector of both movies and movie-related collectibles and memorabilia. The family room in our house is the one room I got to decorate, and it is chock full of stuff. And one of my favorite things to collect are die-cast models of vehicles from various movies. And the holy grail for me, anyway, is a die-cast model of the 747 jetliner from Airport 77. Pretty obscure. I know that they also made one for Airport 75 and Airport 79, and they're very difficult to find. I know they exist because I've seen them, but they're impossible to find on sale right now. At one time, I saw it on an auction site, and the starting bid was $170, and I don't know what it went for, because you had to sign up for the site to find out, what it sold for. I haven't seen them on eBay or Amazon. I don't even know how many they actually produced, but I have not had any luck finding it anywhere. But that would have a place of honor in my Dave cave if I could find one of those.
Now, Dave, you know that if you get your hands on that thing, the way to display it is to buy an aquarium and fill it with water and put it underwater.
Put it on the edge of a cliff. I do like the collectibles from more obscure movies. I don't collect Star Wars or superheroes or Disney, because that stuff's everywhere. Just go to any antique store and, that stuff's there by the ton. But this is pretty obscure, and I would love to find something like that.
Great. Do you have other
wish lists?
Great.
Yeah. I'm not a huge collector of Funko Pops. You guys know what those are?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
I don't.
There's this company, I think it's called Funko Pop, and they do these little kind of cartoon version figurines of various pop culture figures from movies. And they're not very expensive, and you can find them at most toy stores. But one that's extremely rare, as I found out, is they did a Funko Pop of the Snake Plissken character from Escape from New York. Mm. But they only ran about 1,000 of them. And right now they're currently going on eBay for $200 to $300, which is a little bit outside of my affordability.
Toys that usually cost like $10.
Usually they're $10, and Walmart was selling one for $500. I still go to a lot of collectible toy stores and antique shops, hoping some sellers simply didn't know what they were worth, and find one for $25. But one of the guys I talked to who buys and sells these things says that anything with Kurt Russell is really hard to find in a Funko Pop. So that would be a Funko Pop I definitely like to have.
Okay.
And then finally, I gave it a lot of thought. And what I'd really like for my third gift is a one-day U-Haul rental. I review a lot of DVDs and Blu-rays, which are sent to me by various studios and PR groups. And I've been doing it for about, 12 years. And, obviously not everything I review is worth keeping. And now I have a garage that's just full of boxes and boxes of movies that I'll never watch again. My wife would like our garage back, but I can't fit them into the car and take them all in one trip to Goodwill. So a small van rental for just one afternoon would take care of that problem. I could just load them up, get them to U-Haul, and get them out of my way.
Don't take them to Goodwill. Send me a list, and I'll help you purge. I'll even pay for some shipping.
I don't know.
I have to do something like that before moving out to Houston, to Texas, getting rid of all this stuff.
Yeah. Well, I try to purge about once a year, and it's really hard because I go through, all of the stuff that's on my shelves, and am I really ever going to watch this again? Or am I just keeping it because it's a classic? And even if I don't like it very much, like I held on to Dr. Zhivago for years and I never liked that movie, but my reasoning was, well, it's a classic,
Well, that's great. That's a great list. So maybe some antique dealer out there will take pity on you, or they'll just be laughing at you because they have these things and you don't.
So far, it's laughter. Yeah.
Yes. So, Rachel, you're up.
All right. Yes. So I am a huge fan of art books. And so that was the first thing that I thought of. I already have a couple from this year. I already have the Ninja Turtles. I'm a big animation fan too. So I already have Across the Spider-Verse. I already have Ninja Turtles art book. But one I don't have, and it's even in Japanese, but I don't care. I just want the art, is the art book for Suzume, the new film from Makoto Shinkai, which I love. And he's maybe my favorite working director. So I would love to get this art book. And it is, art books are a little pricey. They're usually over $40. They're an investment, I guess. So it'd be somebody that really likes me to get for me for Christmas. But I would love to get that art book. So that's the first thing.
Very cool.
That I thought of. And then the next thing I thought of, I also collect Funko Pops. It's bad. Don't start. But I have the 5 collection for Mickey Mouse over the years, and I love it. And I want to get the 5 collection for Minnie. It starts with the black and white, and then goes all the way through to there's one. There's the 80s Mouse Club Minnie, all the way to the current iteration. The current mini design, and I just think that's fun, so I like that.
Those are fun. One of the ones I actually have in my office is the what I think is probably the first of those Mickey ones, which it's the first shot of him from Plane Crazy with the messy hair and the mirror. And it's funny because people look at that and they go, is that Mickey Mouse? I'm like, yeah, that's the very first appearance of Mickey Mouse, but it doesn't quite look like him exactly. So
yeah, the Mickey set is really fun. It's got Plane Crazy, it's got the classic with the red pants and buttons, and it's got Fantasia, it's got Beanstalk Mickey, and then current Mickey. It's a lot of fun, and the mini one is also really cute.
That's great. And do you have one more?
Yes. So I would love if somebody got me some. There's this company that called Opo Pop. I think is how you say it. Opo Pop. That makes the best popcorn I've ever had. With really, really delicious flavors, cocoa mint, salted caramel, gingerbread, cinnamon, really yummy flavors, and it just seemed like appropriate for you know, movie recommendations. And I've tried them before and they're really good. And so if somebody wanted to give me some oh pop, I think it's really good.
Oh, okay. Maybe that'll appear in your stocking.
Yeah.
This year.
I'm trying to be good.
Yeah. Well, Todd, it's your turn.
Okay. Well, my list, I always have just an Amazon list going all the time. My family knows that's where they go and see what, you know, discs I'm looking for and such. It's almost always discs. I mean, I just get stacks and stacks of DVDs and Blu-rays for Christmas every year, and I'm perfectly happy with that. So a few of the ones that I've got on my list this year, there was a release put out by Kino a few months back that's called Soundies, the Ultimate Collection. On Blu-ray, and I've always been intrigued with short films from the classic era. I think partially because I, you know, grew up watching The Three Stooges and The Little Rascals on afternoon TV, and you know, when there's been other collections of these shorts that come out from like Warner Archive or whatever, you know, like the Crime Does Not Pay films and the Joe Madoc's films of those, I always got to grab those because I'm intrigued by them. So this is like, you know, these are like the music videos of the 40s where they've just done these short films and it's Duke Ellington or Count Basie or things like that. And they're just doing a song, you know, and that, but they used to play these in theaters, or I think in some cases there were little machines that you would watch these on, things like that. But this collection, it's like four discs. It's got over 200 of these shorts, and it just looks like one of the most intriguing sets. And I've heard a bunch of other people recommend it this year. So that's definitely one that's on my list right now. I've also got, you know, speaking of like, you know, Blu-ray sets and such, Arrow Video has recently released a couple of new sets of Shaw Brothers films. They've got like three releases in this series that's come out. And, you know, they had some releases a year or two ago that was like a big box set that cost you like $250 or something like that. These are much more manageable, like $30, and you get like three or four movies and such. But, you know, like there's one that they call the Basher Box, and it's got Boxer from Shang Tung and Chinatown Kid and King Boxer on there. There's another one that's all Lar Kar Lung stuff, like Executioners from Shaolin, Heroes from the East. So, you know, just I there's a bunch of these that I haven't seen before, and I'm always thrilled to get discs that are for things that I've never seen, because it just builds up my watch list, and I love that. So I've got a bunch of those on my list as well. And then what's the last thing I put on this category? Playmobil, the toy company, you know, which has things you can build and such, you know, it's not Lego, but it's kind of a similar thing to Lego, where they put out these sets of things to build. But they've got the Ecto-1 from Ghostbusters with little figures of all four Ghostbusters. So I would like the Playmobil Ecto-1 because I love Ghostbusters.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, you gotta have toys under the tree.
Those all sound very good and actually much more imaginative than mine, because I'm sort of at the age where you almost don't want any more gifts. You know, the last thing you want is anything else you have to store in your house. So I think most of my wishes, they're basically going to be self-aggrandizement and refer to my podcast, Pop Art. So my wish is to, of course, get more listeners. Everybody wants more listeners, so I want more listeners. I would also like more people involved actually in the industry as guests, you know, filmmakers, designers, actors, screenwriters. And of course, with that comes fame and fortune. I don't think that's too much to ask.
Of course.
You know? And I guess I've been good. I don't know.
Fortune, you know, it's and such glory, a relative Shorty. Thing. Fortune and glory.
So, staying with the ghost of Christmas future, they say it is better to give than to receive. or as conservatives call it, dirty atheistic communism. So what are three gifts you might wish to bestow on our public, or on friends or our public or anything like that? So let's start with Dave this time.
Okay. Well, this one is for my dear wife of 33 years. And I'd like to bestow on her the Irwin Allen Master of Disaster Blu-ray collection from Shout Factory. It contains 7 movies, none of his classics. The crappy latter-day ones like Beyond the Poseidon Adventure and When Time Ran Out, and a bunch of TV disaster movies he cranked out in the 70s. And no, my wife doesn't like disaster movies. She's more into K-dramas. However, I can just claim the crazy Amazon guy sent the wrong thing. And
you can't anymore. You can't anymore. This has now gone public.
Okay, don't tell her that. Okay.
Okay. Make sure she doesn't hear this podcast.
Yeah, I'll say, and since it's already here, we might as well make the best use of it. And then I'll make it up to her with dinner at our favorite Italian restaurant. And then I'll have this collection of crappy movies that I paid way too much for. So, and that
sounds great.
Yeah. And this next gift is for that new teacher who's taking my position when I retire this year. And I'm going to bestow upon her a collection of inspirational movies about teachers, like To Serve with Love, Goodbye, Mr. Chips, Stand and Deliver, Mr. Holland's Opus. And then I'll wish her luck on her new career and remind her that none of her career is going to remotely resemble anything she sees in any of these movies, but it might keep her, incentivized to keep going. And then finally, like I said before, I don't collect a lot of Funko Pops, but I don't have any problem giving them to other people, especially for those relatives and friends that I'm not that close to and feel obligated to acknowledge, but I don't want to spend a lot of money on them. And since there's a Funko Pop for almost every single interest, movie related or not, I guess they're kind of like the nerd version of those Hickory Farms meat and cheese packs that you used to be able to buy for that person you didn't know what to buy for. So I would give everyone Funko Pops, and I could probably take care of all my relatives, for about $100.
Wow. Well, it's the thought that counts.
It's the thought that counts.
Of course, I'm not sure what the thoughts are on all these gifts. But
I heard you like this band, so here's a Funko Pop.
Yes.
Actually, Howard, can I go next? Because I can segue very nicely off of what Dave has here, because in this category, I also put Funko Pops. And I think Funko is going to get a lot of promotion here from this podcast. But I mean, seriously, this is something that I have been doing for my son, my daughter, and my son-in-law for the last several years. I always get each one of them a Funko Pop because, like Dave was saying, I can find something that is based on their interests. And most of the time it is tied into a movie that they like, sometimes a video game or something else. But, with all three of them, I can typically find something tied to a movie that they really enjoy and get them something. And it's a nice, good, like we say, usually about $10, $12, gift, that is always a lot of fun. I mean, they always know, they see it under the tree. They know the box shape. It's the same box shape all the time for these Funko Pops. And, it's just like how back when I was a teenager, we used to see a CD and we go, well, they'll look at the way that's wrapped. That's a CD, clearly. Well, now it's these Funko Pops. I honestly didn't have much for this category because most of the people I buy for are not into movies the way that I am. And we don't buy them movie stuff typically. But Funko Pops is certainly always a way that I do tie that in because it suits my interest in this pop culture stuff. And I get to try and connect it with something pop culture that each of the three youngsters in my life do. So, The only other thing I had down in this category, and I just spotted this a few days ago, and I thought, oh, that's something I need to get for my daughter and her husband. So I'm banking on the fact that I don't think they listen to this show when I'm on it. They're very much into board games, and they've got a number that tie into various movies or things like that, and especially Disney, because they're both very into Disney characters as well. So I recently saw a game that's called Animated, and it's tied in Disney Animation Studio, and it's one of these complex games where you're supposed to collect different pieces and do the different parts, and I guess the goal is that you're putting together one of their classic animated films. So you got to get, you know, the layout and the drawing and the backgrounds and, you know, coloring, all that. You have to collect all these different elements and have the final film when you're all done. And I looked at that and I thought, well, that looks just up my daughter's alley when it comes to the kind of games they play. And it looks like this is one that I could probably sit and play with them, because some of those games they play are way too complicated for my brain. But this one looks like I could handle it. So those are the things I had in this category.
That's great. So next, let's go to Rachel.
All right.
Are you there, Rachel?
Yeah, yeah. I'm here. Sorry. So yeah, my family isn't that super into movies. This was a challenge for me to think about. But one thing I thought of, and this would probably be for my mom, that I could convince her to, that she might be interested in, because my mom does love, she loves art, and she's a painter herself. And so I think she would be inspired by, like I said, I love art books. And there's a great one called Ink and Paint, The Women of Walt Disney Animation by Mindy Johnson. And I think it's appropriate, especially on this 100-year anniversary of Disney, to celebrate not just the nine old men, you know, that are pretty well known, but to dive a little bit deeper. And you find out that the incredible women who helped to create the Disney animated films that we know and love, and including Mary Blair, Dorothy Ann Blank, Mildred Rossi, just really incredible women. And this goes, it's an art book, so it is expensive, but it's very well researched. It's very interesting, has tons of art in it. And you get to know some of the awesome women. And so I think my mom would be interested in that. And then I think my dad, he likes reading history books. He's not a movie person. He hasn't seen Oppenheimer, but I think he would be interested in American Prometheus, the book that it's based on. I think I'd have an easier time getting him to read that book than I would getting him to see the movie. So I think that would be one I would probably get. I actually haven't read it, but I heard it's good book. And then I thought of for my friend Jen, who I go to a lot of movies with, I think to get her the Opposable Thumbs by Matt Singer book. I was all thinking books this category. New book about Siskel and Ebert by Matt Singer. Very entertaining. Very well written, very interesting. So a good one for the movie fan.
That sounds like a good book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of press about that one lately.
So Nicole, take it away.
And take it away I shall. So I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, but I don't tend to get a lot of gifts for friends and family for the holidays. I usually gift people on their birthdays. And so during the Christmas season, in previous years, I've purchased items for the children of my friends rather than my friends. So I tend to buy toys. But this year, if I was playing Santa, I would get DVDs from the Manhattan Short Film Festival, particularly volumes 7 and 8. For those who aren't familiar with Manhattan Short or these DVDs, every year the festival releases a volume of around 8 or 9, a volume of DVDs, and each volume contains around 8 or 9 short films that are some of the films that were in their program the previous year. And a lot of these volumes also contain shorts that were either nominated, made it to the shortlist, or at least qualified for an Oscar. So I would give one or two of volumes 7 and 8 to two people in my mind who favor one of the shorts when they saw these films, so they could have it on hand to watch again. And I will also buy some bonus copies to gift to people who missed the festival in previous years so that they can see these shorts for the first time, because the festival only releases 500 copies of each volume. So when the DVDs and the Blu-rays sell out, they're gone and you won't be able to get one. And I really, really think that some of the films deserve a rewatch and support, particularly Lacrimosa, which is on volume 7. And that is a short film from Austria that clocks in around 18 minutes. It's about a young woman who finds her lost lover in a world of ever-changing surreal landscapes. But love, she discovers, is more complicated than she imagined. And the film was made entirely underwater, which I liked. And when I screened it in Philadelphia a couple of years ago, it actually had somebody in the audience crying. And I'm not surprised, because it is a beautifully made short film and it has very little dialogue, but the story pulls at the heartstrings. And according to the director, the title of Lacrimosa stands for letting go. And she said that this can be very difficult sometimes. Now, volume 8 comes in. I would purchase this because it has a lot of films that were really good and a lot of films that were in the running for an Oscar. And also to support Farah Nabulsi, the director of The Present. The Present is a short film that was nominated for an Oscar in 2021. That's on volume 8 for the Manhattan Short DVDs. And this movie is about a man named Yusuf who, on his wedding anniversary, he takes his young daughter out in the West Bank to buy his wife a gift. And between soldiers, segregated roads, and checkpoints, the film asks, how easy can it be to go shopping? And when this short was nominated in 2021 for Best Live Action Short, along with another short film on the same volume 8 DVD called White Eye, the Oscar for Best Live Action Short that year went to another film called Two Distant Strangers, which is about a man that gets stuck in a time loop after a run-in with a cop. And I think that was so unfair. And Farah Nabulsi was totally snubbed for an award that this film deserves. The acting, the writing, the cinematography was so on point. And while Two Distant Strangers was a good movie, it's no comparison to The Present when considering the craft of cinema alone. And so that was just plain wrong. And I think this snub was a political move, given the climate at the time with the George Floyd protests going on, which has no place in a ceremony where the industry is supposedly honoring the best in film. And because of that, I think that if I had the budget, I would buy tons of volume 8 DVDs and give them out to strangers just in support of this one film, even though there are like 7 or 8 other movies on the disc. More people should see The Present and appreciate it for what it is, which is great cinema. But unfortunately, because this movie is set in Palestine and was made, you know, by a Palestinian director, it gets shoved under the rug. So that is what I would be giving out if I played Santa.
Well, that sounds great. I think that's fantastic. I am not, mine aren't for anybody in particular. They're mainly for people who are really into movies and how they get made and sort of behind the scenes. as I said, I'm at that age where everybody my age is relieved that they only have to buy for the grandkids. And even that can be a little annoying. So I'm going with a set of books that really changed the way I looked at movies. And the first is The Celluloid Closet, Homosexuality in the Movies by Vito Russo, which was published in 1981. It's basically a history as to how gay people have been portrayed on screen. It doesn't necessarily list gay characters in movies, but it's more a study of how they were portrayed and why. But I just can't look at films the same way anymore after reading that. I'm also looking at how minorities and other marginalized groups are treated in films, and always looking for the little things. And there are other books and films that also cover this topic for almost any minority or marginalized group, but the book really blew my mind. What Happens Next, A History of Hollywood Screenwriting, published in 2001 and written by Mark Norman, screenwriter of such films as Shakespeare in Love, is the history of screenwriting in Hollywood, how it developed, why it is the way it is, and it gives a fascinating look at what happens behind the screenwriting process. If you want to know why screenwriters are treated so poorly in comparison to their true worth, this is the book for you. And next is a book set, two books by the same author, Mark Harris. First is Pictures at a Revolution, which traces the films that were nominated for the 1968 Oscars and how it reflected the death of old Hollywood in the films Dr. Doolittle and Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, against the birth of the new Hollywood with Bonnie and Clyde and The Graduate, with the winner being a compromise in The Heat of the Night. And he followed this up with Five Came Back, the story of five filmmakers, John Huston, Frank Capra, George Stevens, John Ford, and William Wyler, who put their film careers on hold while they joined the military during World War II.
And that's a set of two books?
Well, they're different books, but by the same author, so I just put them together.
What was the first one called again?
Pictures at a Revolution.
Thanks.
He's a really good writer. I mean, you just... You know, his prose style and everything is very involving, and the books were almost impossible to put down for me. So moving to The Ghost of Christmas Present, you're asked for three movies, perhaps ones not as well known, that we can recommend to the public. So, Rachel, let's start with you.
And these are all holiday films, I think, is what we're... Or right. Asked to do. So for me, I thought of some fairly recent ones that were straight streaming or that were on television that maybe people might have missed, because that's kind of my specialty is TV movies. And so I thought of 8-Bit Christmas, which is on HBO Max.
I liked that one.
Yeah, charming. Or I guess it's Max now, whatever. Charming little Christmas movie. It's very similar to A Christmas Story. It's the same plot, basically, but it's just set in the 80s. And it's the kid, his big gift that he wants is he wants the Nintendo system. And then his sister wants a Cabbage Patch doll, and kind of how they're scheming and trying to get it. And it's got Wenzel Fegley, who was Timmy Failure, who I love that movie too. He's a really good little teen child actor, whatever. It's good. Neil Patrick Harris is narrating it, and it's very sweet. And then in the world of Hallmark, one of the best ones that I think could be like a gateway if you're not in the Hallmark camp, but I think a really well-made, very, very well-done one. It was called A Kiss Before Christmas. And this stars James Denton and Terry Hatcher. And it's kind of your take on It's a Wonderful Life-ish family man kind of a thing, where he's this real estate developer person who is constantly getting beat by people who the bad man of business and everything, and he does it the straight way, and he's he's always struggling. And so he makes it, he says, oh, I wish I hadn't been the good guy, basically. And so he wakes up, he's in this altered dimension where he's got the big fancy house and the fancy job and everything, but he doesn't have the family. He doesn't have the wife, who's Terry Hatcher. And what was, I thought was really brilliant about the script was they had both his kids be adopted. And so in the alternate dimension, his kids are with other parents and he has to see that. And he's like, what? And I thought that was very creative. And they have incredible chemistry. They had it on Desperate Housewives. And I just thought it was very heartwarming, very well done. One of the good ones, Mary Lou Henner is in it and she's always great. And then for something not Hallmarky, the Anna and the Apocalypse, I recommend. This is
I'm hoping it'll be the movie of the month for December.
Yeah. Really fun combination of musical, Christmas movie, zombie film that I was surprised at some of the people who got turned. I wasn't expecting some of the people. So it kept me on my toes and the songs are super catchy and it's just unique, something different. Those are the three I thought of.
Well, I highly recommend Anna and the Apocalypse. And vote for it. Vote for it for movie of the month. though this may be out after all the votes are in. So Todd, take it away.
Okay. So the first one I picked is a Christmas movie only because of one scene, but that's enough for me. One of my favorites of the teen genre from the 80s, Better Off Dead. And the reason I pick this because of its Christmas scene is it's kind of a inside joke between my brother and I. He's not as big of a movie guy as I am, but we did watch a lot of movies on cable TV in the 80s, and Better Off Dead was one of them. So every Christmas, one of us has to reference this scene where you've got the girl who's a foreign exchange student from France and with this obnoxious family, and they're saying to her, do you have Christmas in France? And then the mom squeezes her cheeks and makes her lips puck out as she's going, Christmas, trying to make her say the word Christmas. So that's just an inside joke with my brother and I.
When he gets all the TV dinners.
Yes, he gets TV dinners for Christmas. Okay. Yes. Anyway. So, yes, for one scene, I'll do that one. Then a movie I actually just watched for the first time earlier this year. Watching it, didn't realize that it was in any way tied to Christmas, but it does take place at Christmas time, from 1999, Go, which is, kind of one of those films that you watch it and you go, well, this is definitely influenced by the whole Tarantino Pulp Fiction craze. You know, it's kind of the format of the movie and telling the movie in different chunks out of order, et cetera, and all that. But I really liked this film. I was impressed by it. I thought there were some good performances going on. And for something that's a little just off kilter, but still hits on the Christmas season, a good fit, I think. And then the last one is a Christmas movie in name only, because the only thing about it that has anything to do with Christmas is the title itself. It's the 1940 Preston Sturges film Christmas in July, right. Which has Dick Powell in there. He's basically, I mean, it's a complicated story, but he's a guy that he enters like a jingle contest for a coffee company that has a big cash prize, and like his coworkers think, oh, he's out of his mind, just one of his silly dreams. And so they like write a fake telegram that makes it look like he's won the contest. And so then he goes off to the coffee company is like, I won the contest. And the owner of the company who doesn't pay attention to anything is just like, okay, well, this must be the winner. And suddenly he's a celebrity and he's got, money and all this stuff. And it's, he didn't actually win the contest. So it's a very charming film. And like I said, the title might make you think it's a Christmas movie. It's not, but still, I think would be a lot of fun to watch at Christmas time.
Great. I highly recommend those two. We covered Go on Pop Art at one point, so I really like Go. Nicole, you're up.
I have two holiday movies to recommend. The one is actually a movie that I put up for December movie of the month. So I figured, you know, we're having the podcast. I'm doing, you know, the poll is out. I might as well mention something from Tiffany's. Until recently, I didn't even know that this movie is based on a novel with the same name. So that's interesting. I just found that out in recent days.
Repeat the title, because I think I talked over it.
Something from Tiffany's.
Okay, great.
Okay. And so I don't know if I will end up reading the novel that the book is based on. I might pick it up if I'm bored, but I tend to read a lot of nonfiction. So if it's a book, if it's nonfiction, make a movie and then I'll and then I'll consume it. It was released last year in 2022, and it is predictable, but I was entertained. And for someone who, if anyone's looking for something that's light, that's just not, that's not too Christmassy, and something that you just need to kind of get you over the holiday hump, I would say, you know, something from Tiffany's is worth a watch. For those who haven't heard of it, here's my slightly modified version of the summary for this movie from Metacritic. And it reads, "Nothing compares to the magic and excitement of the holidays in New York City, one of my favorite places, where the streets blaze with lights, windows dazzle, and a special box from Tiffany could change the course of a person's life over or several lives. A baker named Rachel and her boyfriend Gary are happy enough, but not quite ready for that big commitment. While a widowed father named Ethan and his girlfriend are the perfect picture and are just about to make it official. But when a car accident leads to a simple mix-up of gifts that causes all of their paths to cross, it sets off a series of twists and unexpected discoveries that lead them to where they're truly meant to be. Because love, like life, is full of surprises. And for me, while this rom-com is holiday related, I found it to be like an exercise in ethics and integrity, which might be reading too much into it. I had a coworker once who told me that I take movies way too seriously when she and I were discussing the movie Hitch starring Will Smith, which I can't stand. So based on what she said, maybe I was reading too much into something from Tiffany's when I was watching it. But I do have a problem with the Gary character, who knows he has an item that someone is looking for, but instead of making things right, he has this finders keepers mentality, and I don't like that. Nor did I like how he handled the conflict in this movie. That said, the movie itself is cute, in my opinion, and might also make you hungry. My second recommendation would be a short film titled A Christmas Dinner, which is a 5-minute comedy. It is available on YouTube, and it's directed by a gentleman named Tyler Yarbrough. In the film, a family's Nutcracker Christmas dinner is interrupted when the narrator unveils their darkest secrets. And given that it's only 5 minutes, I would recommend this movie to anyone who needs a quick chuckle and anyone who's also curious to find out if their own family dinner table might, you know, take a turn if people's darkest secrets were revealed. It's a funny little movie.
Sounds great. Sounds like something to keep a lookout for. So thank you for that. And now Dave.
Okay. I have three titles here. they're pretty junky compared to, I guess, the other ones that have been mentioned. The first
sounds
is
perfect.
The first is Santa Jaws.
Love the title.
And you can kind of find that everywhere. I think it's on Tubi, and I know it was on Amazon. That's where I saw it. And, it is a cheap movie. You know, the special effects that make Sharknado look like Jurassic Park. And but it's genuinely it's a funny movie. A young comic book artist, his teenager. He gets possession of this magic pens that makes his drawings come to life. And one of his creations is a shark he calls Santa Jaws, which does come to life and starts eating a lot of the locals. It's really cheap, but it's genuinely funny with a lot of kills that incorporate something commonly related to Christmas. We started watching that each year at my house. It's definitely gory, but it's, you know, it's that over the top cartoon CGI gore. So it's good for the whole family. The other one is sort of the polar opposite. And it's a film that I had to review a few years ago called Better Watch Out. And this is a really mean spirited movie, but kind of fun if you're in the wrong frame of mind. And it's difficult to summarize movies like this without providing major spoilers, since the big plot twists it depends on occurs during the first act. But it's an interesting seasonal take on the home invasion genre. And with this 18-year-old who agrees to babysit a 12-year-old, and his goofy bickering parents are at a Christmas party. And then there is a home invasion, but the main villain of this movie isn't who you think it is. And it's pretty suspenseful in parts. It's got an off-kilter sense of humor, but it's also pretty disturbing and has a mean streak a mile wide. And, you know, movies like this are only as good as its villains. And this one, to me, has a doozy. The main antagonist is a truly sadistic, hateful character. And the person who plays this character does an incredible job. It's a scenery-chewing performance. It's got better than average performances for a movie like this. It's for those game for this type of movie, you might find yourself laughing at inappropriate moments, but it is an interesting, it's a dark, funny ride. And just don't shut it off until the end credits roll. And finally, my last one, you guys might have to work with me on this one. My third choice was The Final Conflict, also known as Omen 3. Okay, and yeah, the movie is fairly widely known, but perhaps not typically seen as a Christmas movie. But when you think about it, I don't know how many of you have seen this movie.
I've seen it.
I haven't
seen all three.
But when you think about it, it is sort of a Christmas movie, only from the point of view of the Antichrist. An adult Damien Thorne spends most of the movie trying to make sure Jesus isn't reborn and attempts to kill every child born on the prophesied day of the resurrection. So in a roundabout way, he's sort of a modern day Grinch trying to stop the new Christmas from coming. You know, it even has a final scene that looks like it was straight out of an old Christmas movie. I think The Final Conflict does qualify more as a Christmas movie than Die Hard does.
Yeah. Thank God this is pre-recorded, or you would have people knocking down the door for that. But that's actually very clever. Take on the movie. So good choices.
Thanks.
I have three what's called now Christmas adjacent movies. My first is from my favorite genre, film noir. It's 1949's The Reckless Moment with Joan Bennett and James Mason, and directed by Max Ophuls. It's Christmas time. And Bennett plays a bourgeois housewife whose 17-year-old daughter is having an affair with a gangster. But in a confrontation, the daughter hits the gangster and leaves him thinking she killed him. She didn't, I mean, this was, the code was full in force, so they couldn't have it where she killed him. But she doesn't kill him. Instead, he dies after trying to follow her and accidentally falling. Now the mother, also thinking her daughter killed him, tries to cover up the crime, but is confronted by another gangster who knows what happens and begins to blackmail her. This was remade with Tilda Swinton. It was called The Deep End, with the daughter turned into Swinton's gay son. And it's very good, too. The Ice Harvest from 2005 is a black comedy neo-noir directed by, of all people, Harold Ramis, with such stars as John Cusack, Billy Bob Thornton, Randy Quaid, and Oliver Platt. It takes place in Wichita Falls, which apparently is a very dreary place to live. When two business partners steal millions of dollars from their gangster boss, their ability to flee town is hampered by an ice storm. Of course, what comes next is double and triple crosses, a lot of violence, and some very dark humor. And this was the film that was sort of overlooked when it was released. And finally, this is not necessarily an easy movie to watch, and if you're easily triggered, you probably want to avoid it, but it's Night Train Murders from 1975, an Italian revenge film inspired by Last House on the Left, and then, of course, by Ingmar Bergman's The Virgin Spring. Two close friends and students catch a train to Munich to go home for Christmas to stay with one of their parents. They have to transfer to an almost empty train when their first train is waylaid due to a bomb threat. They're followed by two thugs and a mysterious blonde woman they met. At this point, once the train takes off, it gets pretty gruesome and triggering. At this point, it was controversial at the time. The violence against the women is a bit hard to take, but it's very effective, and it ends basically the way Last House on the Left ends. So if you like Italian Gallo films, this is one. And finally, The Ghost of Christmas Past, a memories of a special movie-related gifts that you have received over the year. So let's talk with Todd.
All right. Well, there were three things that came to mind here. First, of course, going back to 1983, the first VCR that my family ever got. I was 12 years old and it changed my life. I mean, I could now rent movies and watch movies whatever I want and record movies off TV. I even remember the first movie we recorded a few days after that Christmas, Popeye aired on TV, and we recorded Popeye and watched that thing over and over again. So yes, the first VCR was a very memorable Christmas gift. Let's see, going back a few years before that, probably around 1978, 79 or so, it used to be all about Star Wars toys for me back then. And so when I got the Death Star playset, which I did not expect at all, typically it was just a thrill to get, you know, an action figure, but to get the big Death Star set was pretty amazing and unexpected. So I'll always remember that one. And then the last thing I have here, a little more recent, a couple years ago, my daughter totally surprised me by getting me a t-shirt with my podcast logo on it. Parade around with this logo that says Forgotten Filmcast on there. And most of the people that encounter me have no idea what it is, but at least for the one person every so often that asks, I can say, that's my podcast. So.
Well, tell her to start cranking them out for everybody else on the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nicole.
When I think about movie-related gifts that I've received, the most memorable are... Two big things. One year I received two copies of Road to Perdition starring Tom Hanks, Jude Law, and Daniel Craig. My boyfriend at the time gave me a used Road to Perdition DVD for Christmas. And My mother also gifted me a brand new Road to Perdition DVDs for Christmas. So I received the same movie from two different people. And at the time, I was more appreciative of my mother's gift and a little bit offended and judgmental of my boyfriend's gift. But over time, I came to appreciate that he was thoughtful enough to give me something that I wanted during the holidays. So shout out to you, who you are. In high school, my grandmother, during another year, when I was in high school, my grandmother gave me a video camera for Christmas, which I still have in my possession to this day. Even though the camera isn't functioning properly right now, it sits as a nice prop or display item in my office, depending on how I want to use it. With most people, I imagine this might just be a regular gift, but for me, it's movie related because I wrote screenplays growing up, as well as short stories, and I was just completely obsessed with the movie making process, so much so that I've been known to watch the special features before watching the movie if I have a DVD. So I wanted to make my own movies, and that camera that I received for Christmas also came in handy when I graduated and went on to when I graduated high school and went on to study film and video production. I used that Christmas gift to complete my class assignments. And while I have owned several other cameras since then, that particular camera is the most memorable gift because it's directly related to my interests in movies in general and in making movies. And also because, according to my brother, if you ask him, he would tell you that he asked for a video camera that year and I asked for a CD player, yet he ended up getting the CD player and I got the camera. And he always teases me sometimes. He'll say, you know, I asked for a camera, you wanted a CD player, yet you got the camera and went and made a career out of it. And I don't have the CD, you know, he doesn't have the CD player. I mean, he doesn't use it anymore. And I don't remember how that all played out in terms of what was actually on our Christmas wish list that year. So his take could be accurate. But if it is, perhaps I also got the camera because I was older than he was at the time. So as a teenager, I would likely be more responsible in taking care to not break the camera. But then I went on to study film and the camera still eventually ended up broken. But that's a story for another day. So there's that. So those are two of my most memorable gifts. That one camera and my two Road to Perdition DVDs.
Okay, great. Dave. You're next.
My first, I got when I was a little kid from an unlikely place. And actually, I don't remember if it was a Christmas gift, but it was a gift. And it was the original teaser poster for Jaws 2. And for those of you who don't know, the original teaser poster wasn't the traditional shark emerging from the water to attack a swimmer picture. It was actually kind of an orange poster of a sunset and a dorsal fin protruding from the water. And it's actually a beautiful painting. And that, I love that artwork ever since I saw it on the wall of the second run theater where I actually saw Jaws 2. As a kid, this theater was a dump, but you know, it was really cheap to go there. And most of the movies I wanted to see showed up there eventually. And I went there every weekend because it was within biking distance. And there was this old guy, I don't remember his name, but he was always the guy at the box office whenever I was there, usually for matinees. So we sort of knew each other. And he knew what a movie fanatic I was. But he actually saved that one sheet for me after it ended its two-week run and gave it to me the next time I showed up. And, you know, the poster was a little bit creased and torn in one corner, but I found a place for it on my bedroom wall, and it stayed there for years. I loved that picture, and that it was so, I thought it was neat that he thought of me of all people. The next one is from my daughter, Lucy. She's an incredible artist, and it surprised me a lot of times with amazing art inspired from movies that we like watching together. And her artwork is in the case of dad being nice and polite and saying, oh, this is cute, let's put it on the fridge. I mean, the artwork is really jaw-dropping. She adds her own unique style to famous shots. And so I have artwork from films like Seven and Saw and Train to Busan. She does something for me every Christmas. Some of it I frame and put in the Dave Cave. And sometimes I had them made into T-shirts. And when I have them made into T-shirts, you know, people ask where I got them. And, you know, it's kind of cool that I have these one-of-a-kind shirts done by my daughter. And finally, my older daughter, Natalie, and I don't know where she found it. She knows how much I love that John Carpenter's The Thing. And she found this sculpture that is a replica of the Petri dish that had Palmer's blood in it. And, it's the blood leaping from the dish. I don't know if it's made of resin or whatever, but it looks really cool. And it has Palmer stenciled on the side of the dish. And so anyone who's even a casual Thing fan knows what that look, you know, knows what that represents. And every time I see it in my display case, I smile. So those very, three things.
Very cool.
Yeah, that's really great. I think we need to get in touch with your daughter.
She just showed me one for, she gave this to me for my birthday, of the Amanda character in Saw with her head in the bear trap. And I looked at it and I was stunned. It was just an amazing piece of work because it's not just, you know, a straight replica of it. It's her own spin on that shot. It's just really cool looking.
Okay, great. So Rachel, you're up.
This one I had a little bit harder time, memorable gifts that I've received that are movie related. I do, like I said, I love art books. And so pretty much every year that tends to be a favorite gift that people, especially because I love animation. So most, you know, my favorite films of the year tend to have an art book, you know, associated with them. And so that's usually a favorite. Also, there's a fun site called Movie Palette where you can get, they use a color from every single scene of a film, and then it creates this palette that you can use as fun artwork. And so that's a fun gift and creative. I also love anytime anybody gets me a unique independent art design, like whether it's Redbubble or TeePublic or just something they got at Comic-Con that's like supporting a unique artist take on, you know, a franchise that I love or something like that. That's always fun, but
yeah. Great. I also had a hard time as well, because even though I got a lot of gifts growing up, I was more into theater than movies. And I sort of developed interest in movies more in high school and then college. So I really only have one, and it's sort of a crossover. And my mother had taken me to see West Side Story, the movie, which at the time I thought was the greatest movie ever made, but no longer. And then one morning, Christmas, I got up and there's a record of West Side Story, the movie. And I know it was a last minute purchase on their part. It was a used copy. Yeah, so they must have been going to garage sales, and they just saw it and said, okay, we'll get this. But it was great. I played it over and over and over again.
Excellent.
So we've covered all the categories. It's time to start preparing to buy that goose for Bob Cratchit and find, you know, and a new day is dawning. So first, we will take a break and listen to a promo from a fellow podcaster before we come back with for some movie recommendations and an update on our podcast and websites, etc. So,
hey, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Abe.
And together, we host
Out Now with Aaron and Abe.
Hey, we pulled that off.
Hey.
This is a weekly review show, right? We talk about movies on a weekly basis.
And other things.
Yeah, we have commentary tracks, we have lots of guests.
A lot of bonus episodes, a lot of game talk, a lot of sports talk.
Yeah, some of sports talk factors in there, along with Simpsons references for whatever reason.
So give us a listen. We're everywhere podcasts are found.
Yeah, they're everywhere, right?
Everywhere.
Out Now with Aaron and Abe.
Coming live.
Sometimes?
I think it's in there.
I think I can edit that together.
Well, welcome back. We will begin our closeout first with an exit question. What films are we most looking forward to the holiday season, and or the ones we are least looking forward to? You don't have to have both. You can just have one. So let's just start with Todd.
Oh, tough one, but I think the one that probably has my interest highest right now is The Boy and the Heron, the new Hayao Miyazaki film, which I think opens next week. So, I'm, you know, there's lots of things that I'm anxious to see, but this is, of course, looks very unique and intriguing. So I'm excited to see it.
Great. Nicole?
This movie is not new, but it's being re-released this month. So I am looking forward to seeing it, which is the Die Hard re-release. I love Die Hard, especially the Die Hard with a Vengeance. And I love a lot of Bruce Willis's movies. So I'm in a mood to see someone kick butt this season. And since he won't be making any movies, you know, anytime
again,
soon, because he's busy with other things. I want to, you know, spend this month enjoying some nice action this holiday, especially since I'm not looking forward to The Color Purple. I wish that it wasn't being remade, yet I still feel the need to watch it just so that I can say I saw it. So I don't know if I'll stream it eventually or what have you, but this season, Bruce Willis has my attention. And so I'm Die Hard all the way. And sorry, Dave, that's not on your top holiday.
No, I love Die Hard. I just don't consider it a Christmas movie.
Gotcha.
It's a Christmas adjacent movie is what we say now. Dave, what are you looking forward to or not looking forward to?
Well, I was looking forward to Dune Part 2, but... And going, there's not a lot I'm looking forward to. I suppose if I could pick one, it would be Chicken Run, Dawn of the Nugget, because I did love the original Chicken Run, and this one is also going to be stop motion. So, and since it's going to be on Netflix, it's not going to cost me anything. So I'll probably check that out.
Great, and Rachel.
I would also have The Boy and the Heron and The Chicken Run, Dawn of the Nugget. I'm looking forward to both of those a lot. But here's a little bit of a wild card. It might be wishful thinking. I'm actually a little bit hopeful for Migration. I haven't loved anything that Illumination has made. I mean, they've made some mildly amusing films, but I just haven't loved anything. But this one is an original story, and it's by director Benjamin Renner, who was the team behind Ernest and Celestine and The Big Bad Fox and Other Tales, which are both really charming and funny. And I'm kind of hopeful that maybe it might be their first movie that I really think's great. And we'll see. Trailers haven't been that great, so we'll see. But I'm just hopeful that this director can bring some of his charm into them, and might be the first one that I really like. So that's the one that I'm optimistic for.
What is it with these Chicken Run movies? What am I missing? I just want to know. Oh, okay.
Well, there's only been one.
I haven't seen the Chicken Run, and because it's so popular, now I want to see it. I understand the appeal with the Funko Pop dolls, but with Chicken Run, I'm very surprised that it's been as popular as it is. So I just curious as to what I was missing. Like,
Aardman is they have a pretty good track record as far as their films. They're an animation studio. They do the Claymation and the Wallace and Gromit and the Shaun the Sheep and the Chicken Run. Was actually it's interesting because it was sort of the catalyst for creating the best animated feature category at the Oscars.
Yeah, I mean we're talking about a sequel coming 20 some years after.
Yeah,
the original, you know.
Yeah, and the original is a really funny take on the prison escape genre.
It's the Great Escape with chickens.
Yeah. So I think a lot of people really love Aardman too.
Well, what makes the Aardman movies work is that they're not just geared at children. There is a lot of adult-oriented humor. They're the working definition of an actual family film.
Yeah.
There's a lot for adults to get out of. And like Todd just said, I mean, the references to The Great Escape just had me howling.
Yeah.
When I first watched it.
And the animation's so charming. I love the fact that you can often see the thumbprints of the animators in as you watch the animation. There's just like in the world of CG where everything's trying to look super realistic and super like it's so nice to see this is actually made by humans is really great. But I mean, it's actually like Aardman has struggled. Their last few releases have done nothing here in the States, and it's only because of and same thing with Laika. I mean, stop motion is in general just not that well received as far as box office. And so, I mean, it's a big blessing that they have this deal with Netflix, because I don't know if they would even be still being able to make movies without it right now. It's been frustrating as an animation fan just to see the stop motion films just not embraced at the box office.
Okay, it does. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one as well. As for me, the one I'm looking forward to just opened on Friday, but I haven't been able to see it yet, so hopefully it's still going to be around here by next Friday, and that is John Woo's new film. It is a Christmas film called Silent Night.
I want to see that one too. I forgot about that one.
I suddenly can't remember exactly what it's about, but I know it's about a father, I think, seeking vengeance for the death of his son against some criminals. But there's an extra twist there, and I can't remember exactly what it is.
Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
It's dialogue-free, isn't it?
Well, that I don't know. That's interesting.
I heard it's actually free of any dialogue. It's all told through action.
Interesting.
Even more interesting then. The one I can't say I'm least looking forward to, but it's the one that concerns me the most. The Color Purple, the musical, is opening on Christmas Day. And, you know, Dreamgirls also opened on Christmas Day and didn't come close to fulfilling its expectation. And I just don't know how Color Purple is going to do. I think it may also fall way short of that, especially come Oscar time, or it may be a huge success. And I'm not sure based on the previews.
Yeah.
So,
Do you think I've wondered if the Academy voters will? What am I trying to say? I mean, it's such a famous snub from the original film that it was nominated for what 11 awards, something like that, and didn't win any. And so there's a part of me that goes, does it even matter? Are they just going to nominate this film to try to make up for past sins?
Well, it's bound to get some Oscar nominations. I'm just wondering if it's going to be left out of the acting categories and maybe picture and adaptation, where they'll be left out of that as well. It's hard to say. It could be everything you dreamed of. But I'm always a bit worried with stage musical adaptations into movies.
Well, they've been hiding that it's a musical, and they've been doing that with a number of films here too. I mean, the ads for Mean Girls don't really clue you in that that's a musical either. And
same thing with Wonka.
Wonka too. Yeah. And I'm thinking, I think actually, these films would benefit from bringing it out there that this is a musical. The thing I keep hearing about Mean Girls is people says, why are they remaking Mean Girls? That movie's not that old. They don't need to do it again. Why are they remaking Mean Girls? And then people say, well, it's not a remake. It's the Broadway show. And nobody realizes
that. Well, I think they might be reacting to the fact that musicals box office wise have not been doing that well lately. I mean, In the Heights underperformed, Steven Spielberg's remake of West Side Story underperformed.
Into the Woods.
Yeah.
Was both terrible.
But it's just like, why make it at all then? I mean, I just think that's the one thing that's interesting about this. I would have no interest at all if it was just a generic Mean Girls remake.
Yeah.
Well, the only reason I'm interested is because it's the musical.
The Color Purple trailers The Color Purple trailers are strange. I mean, I'm intrigued, and I want to see it, but I feel like I'm sitting there watching this trailer and they're saying the reason to go see this movie is Oprah wants you to.
And yes. I'm like, and it's like, no, thanks. So thanks for me. I don't know. I was, I saw the trailer. What did I go see? The Paul Giamatti movie. Why does the name...
Holdovers.
Okay. So when I went to see The Holdovers, The Color Purple was one of the trailers that played before the movie. And I was a bit annoyed at it, even though I do like some of the people in involved in the movie. I was just like, it made me upset because I think that it's disrespectful to the original film, the same way that I think it would be disrespectful if it ends up getting nominations and even if it wins any categories. But it might be a good movie, though. I don't know. You know, yeah. I have no idea. I like my musicals on Broadway, but hey.
Yeah, I'm worried, but we shall see. So let's start finally closing out, and it's time for everybody to start promoting whatever they wish to promote, what is coming up, and what should we be looking forward to from you. So let's start with Rachel.
I thought we were doing one we're not looking forward to.
Oh, if you want to. You don't have to, but yes, certainly. Go with it if you want to. One aren't you looking forward to?
Oh, yeah, well, the one that I'm really not looking forward to is Aquaman 2. I didn't like the original. I thought it was really boring. I was not interested in it at all. And I just dread whenever superhero movies come up these days, unless they're animated, because it's just not pleasant as a critic to review them. The experience with the fans is so unpleasant. I just really dislike the whole experience. So I didn't like the first one, and I have no interest in the second one. So
I wasn't even able to get through the first one. So, yeah,
I like the first one. For me, I thought the original Aquaman is the high point of the DCEU, and maybe that's not saying a lot about the DCEU, but I thought it was like, okay, here we go. This is a live action cartoon, and I'm all over that. So, yeah.
So anybody else have any final films that perhaps you're not looking forward to or looking forward to?
I'm open to just about all the stuff coming out here in the next few weeks. You know, I can't think of any that I'm really just like, oh, I don't want to see that.
Okay, great. So, Rachel, what is coming up? What should we be looking forward to from you?
Yeah, we've got lots of holiday coverage at Hallmarkies Podcast. That's my main gig. And so we cover all of the holiday releases that we can over there, and especially everything on Hallmark Channel. So it's so much fun. And then over at Rachel's Reviews, I have weekly family movie night reviews. I have Theater Tuesdays because I'm also a theater critic. And that's something I've just started this year that I really, really enjoy, talking theater and musicals and stage and everything. And we just published Talking Disney monthly episode with my friend Stanford. We just talked about Wish. So there's that as well. So lots of stuff going on, but especially check out Hallmarkies Podcast for all things holiday.
Fantastic. Dave?
Oh, okay. Well, in December, my annual Best Stuff We Reviewed and Worst Stuff We Reviewed, it will be on Free Kittens Movie Guide, probably at the end of December. Kitten Kibbles and Kitten Krusties. Reviewed a lot of good stuff this year, so it should be an interesting list.
Fantastic. Nicole?
I have two or three movie reviews coming up, as well as an entire backlog of interviews with short film and feature film directors that are very interesting and span a variety of genres, including a thriller called In the Silence, directed by Adam Orton, which is actually screening this week, December 6th, at the Culver City Film Festival. And outside of that, I actually just wanted to mention Discogs, if anyone out there likes purchasing movie soundtracks, or if you have any on your wish list. I've purchased the original score for a movie on this website, and the CD came in a timely fashion and in great condition, thanks to a seller that I brought from called Best Movie Scores. So, and they spell their name with the underscore in between each word. So it's Best_Movie_Scores. I know that this wasn't one of the categories that we cover. I had it on my list for this episode when I was trying to think of a couple of places where people could find like rare items that might be perfect for a movie lover. Discogs is a website that I frequently go to when I'm looking for a soundtrack or an original score that I'm unable to find on eBay, for example. I do tend to look on eBay for a lot of my movie things, but this particular one, it was hard to find, and I found it. Thank goodness. And I know some people don't tend to, there are some people who don't like movie soundtracks or don't care about the scores, but I love them. And so I just wanted to mention that.
Great. Fantastic. And Todd?
Well, of course, we've got episodes that are always flowing for the Forgotten Film Cast. So check those out, certainly. Dave was on a recent episode where we talked about a animals attack movie called Dogs. So check that one out. The most recent episode, I'm joined by Will from Exploding Helicopter, where we talk about a 70s Eurocrime film called Violent Naples. And then this week we have Toby Rohn joining me for a 1950s teen crime film called Teenage Crime Wave. So check those out.
Great. The most recent Pop Art episode is with Sean Homrig, where we talked The Ice Storm and Peyton Place, two sort of soap opera looks, look at their various time periods. The one I'm starting to work on now is from author Jennifer Van Seel, where we discussed Parasite and La Ceremonie, which is about servants that become rather deadly. I had to take sick leave, so Richard, who was going to be my November guest, I have postponed that, and he is now going to be my Valentine's Day guest. So the next episode will be with Jake Lewitt, who's my annual Christmas guest. And this time it's a little different. I chose the first movie, and Jay then chose the second movie. And I chose Wind Chill, and he chose Dead End, both which are about people driving home for Christmas, and it becomes pretty horrifying. So with that, everybody, I want to thank you for taking time out of your holidays to be on the show. It was a lot of fun. I think we learned a lot and gave a lot of people food for thought. And hey, those listening, you know what we want for Christmas.
Yeah, so get on it.
Merry Christmas.
Oh. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
You've been listening to the Lambcast. If you have an idea for a show or would like to join us on the Lambcast, contact us at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Find us on Facebook, just search for Lambcast, or on Twitter, at Lambcast. The Lamb site can be found at largeassmovieblogs.com, and please head over to iTunes to leave us a review.
Go to hell! Go to hell.
Ha 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 ha